This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, the terror state targets Lynn Stewart, part three, from Operation Cyclone to P2OG. Monday, September 25th. The federal courtroom of Honorable John Kotel in Manhattan, 10 a.m. Attorneys for Lynn Stewart, herself an attorney for three decades, come before Judge John Kotel with a motion about National Security Administration secret spying on Lynn Stewart and her attorney, Michael Tiger. This is in relation to the preparation of Lynn Stewart's defense against the federal indictment for conspiracy as a terrorist to aid Omar Abdulrahman, the blind sheikh, in, quote, aiding and abetting terrorism. The motion before the Honorable John Kotel essentially argues that if the government spied on Lynn's strategy sessions with her attorneys as she prepared for her trial, then the trial in which she was convicted was fundamentally tainted and the guilty verdict obtained therein should be dismissed. Her attorney, Joshua Dratel, went before the judge and said directly to the prosecutor, there are four possibilities, and I want you to address one, each and every one of them, or respond to at least one. Did you say, for instance, no, the government did not wiretap? You could answer no. Or you can say, yes, the government did wiretap. Or you can say, it's a secret. It's a government secret. Or still, yet again, the prosecution can say, we don't know. The government has so many departments. It is so complex. We don't know which agency among the government agencies would have wiretapped the conversations between Lynn Stewart and her attorney, Michael Tiger. But, he said, any one of these four possibilities are illegal and it must be addressed. He turned to the prosecutor. The prosecutor did not respond. He turned to the judge, and Judge Kotel turned to the prosecution and said, I am ordering you to respond, and I am giving you a few days in which to respond. The prosecutor then turned to Judge Kotel and said, I know now what your opinion is and where you are heading in the conviction, in the sentencing, rather, of Lynn Stewart. Because the government, the U.S. government, has called for a 30-year sentence for attorney Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart, who was acting only as an attorney in the defense and in assistance of her client, the blind sheikh, Omar Abdulrahman, who has been buried alive in a federal prison. And here the judge got very angry, according to the reports of this hearing before the judge on the motion. And the judge, as many judges often say, do not take any of my remarks as a sign of what I will do in the future. And he then ordered again the prosecution to return with a response. Today on Taking Aim, as I mentioned before, part three of the terror state targets Lynn Stewart. Today, this is the most significant case before us, and we must all mobilize in our resistance to the terror state and our support of Lynn Stewart. Ralph?
I want to alert everybody who's listening to Taking Aim today that at 7 o'clock this evening in New York, Tuesday, 7 o'clock, everybody out to St. Mark's Church, where Lynn Stewart will be addressing supporters in a rally and in a report back on the status of the terror state's campaign against us all, the attempt to destroy the Bill of Rights, the attempt to annihilate the First Amendment and the Sixth Amendment, the actual framing not only of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, but her attorney as well, for having the audacity not merely to defend a client who has been targeted by the United States authorities with fake evidence and false witnessing, but in fact is a government determined to destroy the right of counsel, due process, the right of anybody, whether it's a defendant or an attorney, to have their own ideas, their own history, their own political identity. That is demonized, that is criminalized, and that's what is at stake here. We have to mobilize, brothers and sisters, because the architecture of the fascist state focuses now in the matter of Lynn Stewart, who is the defendant of every single one of us involved in resisting the crimes of this criminalized ruling class that holds sway over the mass of our people. All out tonight, St. Mark's Church, 7 p.m., hear Lynn Stewart, join in the struggle. We have to make sure that this government is defeated in this attempt to send Lynn Stewart to prison for 30 years for exercising the rights that are precious to every one of us.
Ralph, let's go back to the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights, remember, emerged as a struggle of the people once the Constitution had been written. And it is in the Bill of Rights that encapsulates what we call the democratic basic freedoms that we admire and respect and consider as founding principles of democracy in the United States, that is the limited representational democracy that we have here. But these are incredible rights that came as a struggle against, in a way, the limitations of the U.S. Constitution. And the First Amendment is a freedom of speech. And the Sixth Amendment is for the right to counsel, the right that a person has, the right of a defense when they are charged with a crime by the state. And it is these basic principles that are so much under assault, particularly with the recent emergence of the Patriot Act and the continual whittling away with fiat, executive decree by the president, for example, with the orders for the National Security Administration, the NSA, to spy on people's through their phone calls, and the collaboration of the major media corporations, AT&T and others, to go along with the government in this process.
What is at stake here, as was outlined in the hearing in which Josh Stratel confronted the prosecutor, is the very fundamental fact that there is no such thing as a right to defense when the government spies on the discussions of the defendant and their attorney. What is most inviolate under the, you know, you talked about the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. Yes, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution were the result of a revolutionary uprising. In fact, it was the Whiskey Rebellion that compelled the authorities to concede the first 10 amendments that we call the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments were nothing that was handed to us, nothing that the property class that was in control of the society right at the time of the revolution in the United States wanted indeed to allow. It was the uprising of the artisans and the farmers who had made that revolution which compelled the authorities to concede the first ten amendments that we call the Bill of Rights. Nothing has been gained in this country by our population except through struggle. The blacks did not get the vote by voting, brothers and sisters, by mobilizing. It's only our independent mobilization that confronts the authorities and compels them to concede and make concessions. And as soon as we cease to mobilize, they take those concessions back. And that, in fact, is what we're witnessing here today with the terror state's apparatus of control. And what is at issue here with respect to not just the targeting of Lynn Stewart, but the whole notion of the category of terror, the crimes that have been visited upon the United States by the authorities themselves, nothing so concentrates that as the very case before us today. Nothing so illuminates what is at stake here as the demonizing and the criminalizing of none other than Lynn Stewart for 35 years, the defendant of the defenseless, defender of the defenseless. Wherever there was a person who was oppressed wherever there was someone who was without representation, wherever there was someone who was attempting to struggle against overwhelming odds, Lynn Stewart was there. Lynn Stewart was at their beck and call, without compensation, and more times than not, and always available, and always putting herself on the line. And it is that record and that history that is being criminalized today. In fact, in the sentencing memorandum of the authorities, Lynn Stewart is called a career criminal and is, in fact, held up as an example of criminality precisely because of her defense of the most victimized and targeted resistance figures in this country. Anybody who the authorities choose to frame is then utilized to demonize the attorneys who defend them, and that is, in fact, the demolition of the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, our Bill of Rights. What have they said about Lynn Stewart? She was convicted on all 5 counts of conspiring to aid terrorists, of lying to the government, of smuggling out messages from her jailed client, Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, convicted of helping Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman contact followers in Egypt with messages that pertain to a so-called ceasefire, and therefore, by her defense of her client, by her representation of his interests, by her facilitating his ability to communicate, which is the right of every and the obligation of every attorney, she faces 30 years in prison. Brothers and sisters, nothing so, as I say, crystallizes what is at stake here for all of us, because the issues involved, Maya, and we've discussed this repeatedly on Taking Aim, in our 5 years of broadcasting, brothers and sisters, what is it that we have focused upon? The 1% of our population that owns and controls more than 95% of the wealth of the rest of us combined, that tiny handful of people that have usurped and hijacked the state apparatus in their own interest, corporate and banking capital, what the former president of Avis and American Express, Robert Townsend, called the 5,000 who control the commanding heights of the U.S. economy. The state is their instrument of coercion. The intelligence and military apparatus is their means of silencing us, of protecting their rapacious rule. Those are the stakes. 1993, the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, we don't have to guess about what occurred there. Every major newspaper has, in fact, reported, oddly enough, yes, in the pages of the Los Angeles Times, in the pages of the New York Times, in the pages of the Dallas Morning News and the Muslim Monitor, what occurred in 1993, the events that are attributed to Sheikh Abdulrahman, a government operative, an FBI agent, a member of Egyptian intelligence, Imad Ali Salem, sent into the mosque of the blind Sheikh in Brooklyn and in New York, wearing a wire, where he recruits young men to come to meetings, where the government itself proposes not just the question of the bombs at the World Trade Center, but the so-called landmark case for which the Sheikh was put on trial. The bombing of the Brooklyn Bridge, the George Washington Bridge, the Lincoln Tunnel, the Holland Tunnel, the Statue of Liberty, when in fact all of these were operations of the authorities themselves. Every single one of these things was proposed by the authorities. All the facilitation of these events was organized by the authorities. The FBI office in New York, 6 months prior to the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, 50 boxes of transcripts of the wired recordings that this Fink of the United States authorities handed to the FBI. This was a government operation, and on the actual day that it occurred, as the New York Times article by Ralph Rumenthal established, the FBI was the organizer of this event. Imad Ali Salem stated what? I was assured the bombs we provided would not detonate. What are we dealing with here? The terror of the state, the category of the terror, which is to demonize all resistance. Anybody who speaks up, anybody who fights back, anybody who doesn't want blood for oil, any of the oppressed, whether in Iraq or in Afghanistan or any corner of the world, who dares to challenge the imperial hegemony of this tiny ruling class is to be demonized and categorized as a terrorist. Maya, what's at stake here with Lynn Stewart is the ability to continue to function as free citizens in this society. Those are the odds. That's what's at stake. And that's why we need to mobilize with everything we have at our disposal in her defense.
Ralph, let's get to the specifics here of the case. Attorney Lynn Stewart was convicted of three counts related to supposed violation of a commitment that she signed, as well as attorney Ramsey Clark and attorney Abdin Jabara, who the three of them were representing Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman. And the promise that they made, the affidavits that they signed to abide, were of special administrative measures, which are onerous measures that were imposed on their client, Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman, which cut off his communication with the world. He was allowed a 1 15-minute phone call with his family in Egypt, and he was allowed to meet with attorneys and a translator that they brought with them. And he was allowed a weekly telephone call to these attorneys. The special administrative measures were imposed by Patrick Fitzgerald, the federal prosecutor, who was one of the prosecutors in the trial of Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman, and who has come to quite a bit of attention lately. And Patrick Fitzgerald, who was a key witness in the trial, had these special administrative measures imposed by the Department of Justice, which would prevent the communication of Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman with the outside world. Lynn Stewart was found guilty of one count of a conspiracy to provide or conceal material support to a terrorist conspiracy. In other words, the material support was her own person, her own activity, her own role as an attorney. And what was this terrorist conspiracy? The terrorist conspiracy was that of a co-defendant that the judge refused to separate and to his own individual trial and separate the trial of Lynn Stewart and the translator Mohammed Yusri from this co-defendant, Ahmed Abdel Sattar, who is supposedly a member of the Islamic group of Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman. He's a postal worker who served as a paralegal. And the conspiracy of Sattar was to kill persons in a foreign country. That is, it is based on a fatwa that Sattar released in the name of the Sheikh that said that the Islamic group should murder Jews in countries throughout the world. Now, this was released without the Sheikh's knowledge by Sattar and a minority faction of the Islamic group. Remember, it was released. Lynn Stewart knew nothing of the activities of Sattar and knew nothing of this fatwa. She didn't hear about it until the indictment. Another count was of actually providing or concealing material support. What is the material support? Her phone calls, her legal representation. Now, the focus of the case against Lynn Stewart was a June 2000 press statement where she announced to Reuters News, to a reporter in of an Egyptian reporter, and she made a call to London, that her client, Omar Abdelrahman, had withdrawn his personal support for a peace agreement that the Islamic group had initiated in Egypt. And in fact, what if you go back and you actually look at the statement of Omar Abdelrahman, he noted that this peace agreement that the Egyptian government had not abided by it, that was executing and arresting and targeting members of the Islamic group, even though the Islamic group had upheld a peace agreement. And what he actually said was that the Islamic group should reconsider its actions and should listen to all members, all the groups within the group, the minority as well as the majority opinion. He did not say take up armed struggle against the Egyptian government, which is what the government would like to put forward as what he said. Now, 75% of the evidence at trial was not offered against Lynn Stewart or Mohammed Yusri, the translator. 75% and all the rabble-rising and the incitement of the jury by the prosecution was material against Sattar. The government had wiretapped Sitar's telephone and fax machine and obtained more than 85,000 conversations over a seven-year period, none of which were known to Lynn Stewart. She was not a participant. She had only had occasional meetings with her client and had done her best to keep her client in the public eye. Ralph.
Well, look, fundamental. The government of the United States, the prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the collaboration of Chertoff conspired, you want to talk about conspiracy, conspired to frame the sheikh and in turn to target and frame Lynn Stewart. And one of the means through which this was done was by associating the two cases as one. Sattar's case was conjoined to that of Lynn Stewart. But as you say, Lynn Stewart does not speak Arabic. Lynn Stewart had no knowledge of any of the activity of Sattar, nor any means of obtaining such knowledge. And fundamental to this is the understanding that Sattar, interestingly enough, was, as you say, issuing fatwas in the name of the sheikh without the knowledge or the approval of the sheikh. There's no disputing that. The sheikh was not conversant with the fatwas that were issued in his name by Sattar. And that raises a very interesting and fundamental question. Who is Sattar? What is his relationship to this case? How does he come to be deployed in this fashion, not just against the sheikh, but against Lynn Stewart herself? What is his relationship to the United States authorities? And I think that requires us to look at a rather basic issue here. And you referred, Maya, to Operation Cyclone. What is Operation Cyclone? Operation Cyclone was an undertaking of the Central Intelligence Agency, as the Independent in London called it, made in the USA. And the Far Eastern Economic Review wrote an important piece. In 1986, CIA Chief William Casey involved the Central Intelligence Agency in a long-standing proposal from the ISI, which is the intelligence services in Pakistan run by the CIA, to recruit from around the world fundamentalists to undertake a terror operation against the government in Afghanistan and the Central Asian republics of the then Soviet Union. In fact, Brzezinski brags about it in the Grand Chessboard, what he called a bear trap. Over 100,000 religious militants were brought to Pakistan between 1982 and 1992. 60,000 of them, this is all done by the Central Intelligence Agency, organizing terror schools and terror operations for the undermining of the then Marxist government of Afghanistan, whose crime was distributing the land and removing restrictions on women and depriving the landlords, the warlords of the north, of their absolute control over the peasant masses of the countryside. Targeted indeed by the Central Intelligence Agency in Operation Cyclone. Now, one of the most fascinating aspects of this, which is right on point, is that it is under Operation Cyclone that the Sheikh's organization was not just organized by the Central Intelligence Agency, but Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman was brought to the United States in 1990 by the Central Intelligence Agency under Operation Cyclone. The CIA had its own hand in the events that are called terrorist. In fact, the Central Intelligence Agency did the same with Gulbuddin Hekmat Yar and Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. Over $6 billion allocated by the Central Intelligence Agency to these operations.
And let no one be surprised and say this is all a facet of what's happening now of the Bush regime. The program of Zbigniew Brzezinski was initiated, Operation Cyclone, July 3rd, 1979, and the president at the time was Jimmy Carter, a Democrat. And this was when there was the allocation of $500 million to create, quote, the international terrorist movement. And this was Operation Cyclone. It was a CIA program. And the CIA, over the years, poured over $4 billion, and probably more. And it's not just the CIA, as we've documented on prior Taking Aim shows. It was involved with British intelligence, particularly MI6 officers, who along with the MI6 was the notorious division of British military, the SAS. The SAS, who was also involved in undermining the resistance of the people in Northern Ireland.
Maya, we have documented the false flag nature of these so-called terror operations. We have cited the fact that the San Francisco Chronicle exposed that Ali Mohammed, the point man in the bombing of the embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, was in fact working for the Central Intelligence Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, was trained in special forces at Fort Bragg, was assigned the task of organizing the bodyguards of Osama bin Laden. On November 1, 1998, the Independent in London reported, indeed, that the people charged with the 1998 bombings of the United States Embassy in Kenya and Tanzania, Ali Mohammed, were in fact, quote, Central Intelligence Agency operatives assigned to provide bodyguards for bin Laden. These operatives were recruited at the Al-Kifa Refugee Center in Brooklyn, New York, given paramilitary training in New York, and then sent to Afghanistan to join Gulbuddin Hekmatyar's forces, and indeed in that capacity, Ali Mohammed was acting on behalf of the United States Army's Green Berets elite program. The report, and I'm still quoting The Independent, was part of the Washington plan called Operation Cyclone. In Pakistan, recruits and money and equipment were distributed by the Central Intelligence Agency and the ISI to an organization known as Maktab al-Kitimar, the Offices of Services, a front of Pakistan's CIA and the Inter-Service Intelligence Directorate. The ISI, the first recipient of the vast bulk of CIA assistance for these terror operations. Now, these were organized operations of the United States authorities, as has been amply documented by the bourgeois press. The Independent, as I mentioned, Operation Cyclone is established in newspapers across the world. The documentation is indisputable. What's interesting about this is that the targets of opportunity and those who were recruited to these operations began to understand that they were not merely being used, but they were being abused. And one of the features of the trial of Lynn Stewart is that the judge allowed the prosecution to put into evidence ad nauseam the role of Osama bin Laden in organizing terror attacks on the United States government. And what was it that they were ascribing to Osama bin Laden? Why, they were ascribing the responsibility for the bombings of the embassies in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam. They were ascribing responsibility with the blind sheikh for the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center itself. In fact, what we now know to be and what they've established as an FBI and Central Intelligence Agency operation. Do you know, brothers and sisters, and this is right on point with respect to the framing of Lynn Stewart, there is not a scintilla of evidence to associate Osama bin Laden with the bombing of the attacks on the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001. Not a scintilla of evidence. The videos that were produced have been established by the BBC, by Hani Sabai, an electronics expert and others, as a scissors and paste job. The first video that was produced by Tony Blair and others showed Osama bin Laden supposedly addressing the perpetrators of the attack on the World Trade Center and congratulating them. In fact, as was established, this was a scissors and paste job. They took a photograph or a film of Osama bin Laden a year and a half before congratulating members at a wedding party on the guests of the bride and groom, and married this to the fake video, which is the basis for the authorities' claims that Osama bin Laden is involved in these events. Five times Osama bin Laden published statements and elaborate interviews disavowing any association with the attacks on the World Trade Center, the most notable of which was his detailed statement in Umat, the Pakistani publication, on September 28, 2001. And in this document, which we have referred to frequently, and it was confirmed by the BBC, I have said repeatedly, I am not involved in the 11th September attacks in the United States. As a Muslim, I try my best to avoid telling a lie. I had no knowledge of these attacks, nor do I consider the killing of innocent women and children and other humans as an appreciable act. My Islam forbids strictly causing harm to innocent women and children and other people, and such a practice is forbidden to us even in the course of battle. It is the United States government which is perpetrating every maltreatment of women and children and common people across the world, Osama bin Laden says. I try my best to tell the truth to the people. The U.S. has no friends, nor does it want to keep any because of the prerequisite of friendship. There are intelligence agencies in the United States which require billions of dollars worth of funds from Congress and government every year. This funding issue is not a big problem with the existence of the former Soviet Union, Osama bin Laden continues. But after the collapse of the Soviet Union, these agencies and their budgets were in danger. They needed an enemy. They began this propaganda against Osama and Taliban, and then they created their own incident. Now, this is an elaborate and detailed statement. On five separate occasions, Osama bin Laden has articulated his estimate of what is involved in the bombings of the attacks on 2001, September 11th, brothers and sisters. That is the underlying reality about this frame-up of Sheikh Abdul Rahman and the targeting of Lynn Stewart, and we shall return to more of this in a moment. Maya.
We'll return after the station identification.
Joy of resistance. The Hyde Amendment is 30 years old this year. In 1976, it stripped poor women of their newly won right to legalized abortion, and today the attacks continue. On Thursday, September 28th at 11 a.m., join Joy of Resistance as we speak with Liza Fuentes of the Hyde Amendment 30 Years is Enough campaign, with Annie Tumino of the Women's Liberation Birth Control Project on what's wrong with the FDA's recent decision on the morning after pill, Moretta Short of Women of Color and Allies, and Loretta Ross, National Coordinator of Sister Song, a Woman of Color Reproductive Health Collective, on their upcoming conference, Let's Talk About Sex. That's Thursday, September 28th at 11 a.m., Joy of Resistance. Find out the meaning of reproductive justice.
No corporation, government, religion. This is Taking Aim with
Rao Shonman
and Maya Shone. Our program today, The Terror State Targets Lynn Stewart, Part 3, From Operation Cyclone to P2OG. Ralph was referring to Osama bin Laden and the bringing to the United States of Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman in 1990 as part of Operation Cyclone. And Operation Cyclone, which began with appropriations July 3, 1979, under the administration of President Jimmy Carter, these were secret and overt appropriations to the Central Intelligence Agency to destabilize the Soviet Union. And as a result, the CIA set up training camps in Virginia where, Islamic fundamentalists were taught, quote, sabotage skills. And also schools were set up in Brooklyn. Ralph referred to one of them. British MI6 and the SAS went to Pakistan where they trained people. And an important article appeared in friendsofliberty.com on October 27th, 2002. And it's very interesting, this article. Friends of Liberty, you might say, is a far-right organization. But the analysis comes straight as if they were socialist writing. The analysis, the understanding of the underpinnings of this terrorist state. And in this article, what is very significant is the funding by the United States of the real terrorists. The real terrorists are those who oppress the peoples of the world. And that's exactly what the United States was doing with the Central Intelligence Agency and along with the British SAS and MI6 to undermine the aspirations of the people of Afghanistan. and the people of the entire Central Asian republics. And the purpose was to have control of Central Asian oil, as Brzezinski very clearly spelled out. But let's look at who the United States has brought to the United States. And it's in this article it elaborates. And most of them are living in no other place but Florida, where Governor Jeb Bush resides. The anti-Castro Cubans, for example. Former Guatemalan Defense Minister Ramo Morales, accused of, quote, devising and directing an indiscriminate campaign of terror against civilians, including the torture of an American nun and the massacre of 8 people from one family. Then we have, during the 1980s, when the Army of El Salvador tortured and had explicit death squads against the people who were struggling for democratic aspirations and a better way of life in El Salvador. The former chief of the army now lives comfortably in Florida. General Prosper Avril, the former Haitian dictator, who displayed his bloody victims of his torture on television. When he was overthrown, he was flown to Florida by the U.S. government and granted political asylum. A leading member of the Chilean military during the reign of General Pinochet, whose responsibility was executions and torture, lives in Miami. The Iranian general who ran the Savak, notorious prisons in Iran.
Set up by the CIA and the Mossad,
That's right. And under the Shah, is a wealthy exile in the United States. And we go to Asia, from Pol Pot, one of his senior henchmen who enticed Cambodian exiles back to their certain death, lives in Mount Vernon, New York. The list goes on and on. And, of course, the most notorious center of training is at Fort Benning, Georgia. And as we know, there's been the campaign against the School of America's year in and year out. 2/3 of El Salvador's army officers who committed, according to the United Nations, the worst atrocities of that country's war, 2/3 of them were trained at Fort Benning, at the School of the America, the head of Pinochet's secret police who ran the Chilean concentration camps. So here we have the role of the U.S. fomenting, creating terror against the peoples of the world. But who is on trial? Attorney Lynn Stewart. Attorney Lynn Stewart, who has defended the oppressed, those without means, throughout her career as an attorney.
Ralph? And in particular, let's be very focused about this. In elucidating the role of the Central Intelligence Agency and the American ruling class in organizing terror operations against their enemies, when the people who they deploy no longer are useful to them or become disaffected from them, they are then demonized in turn. And that is what we have at work here with the blind Sheikh Abdulrahman. Because Sheikh Abdulrahman had nothing whatsoever to do with the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. As the record establishes, this was an FBI and a Central Intelligence Agency operation, the hands of intelligence all over the events of 1993. In fact, as we've attempted to document over a substantial period of time, the blind Sheikh had nothing whatsoever to do with the attacks on the tourists, for example, at Luxor. That event, for which his organization did not accept responsibility, was proclaimed by a faction that was not recognized by the Islamic group of which Sheikh Abdulrahman was the titular head. But in specific terms, the ceasefire, as it's called, but in fact a peace agreement, the peace agreement that had been arranged with the Mubarak regime, because the Mubarak regime was engaged in massive repression, the renditions of the Central Intelligence Agency to Egypt, which had been all over the newspapers, are undertaken for a very simple reason. The Mubarak regime tortures all dissidents, tortures all opponents, fiendishly and without remorse, rounds up people at will across Egypt. This targeted organization Islamic group is victimized by this regime, and the peace initiative that was undertaken was used as a cover by the regime to continue the roundups. And what was the response of Sheikh Abdul Rahman? To say the utility of the peace agreement is in question, and his recommendation? We should return to using the media to expose the nature of this regime. What is it that is being held out here as a crime of his attorney, Lynn Stewart? The declaration of the Sheikh's positions, which he has every obligation to do as his advocate and his attorney, articulating for the world what it is that he represents. That is the responsibility of an advocate. Every single thing that has been ascribed to Lynn Stewart, every action with respect to the Sheikh, the so-called SAMs, or the Special Administration Measures, which are designed to remove the First Amendment rights of people who are convicted of something. That doesn't mean that their right to free speech is abrogated. But the attorney has an absolute obligation and right to represent their client, and that is an inviolate obligation and right. And what is it that is being imputed to Lynn Stewart as her crime? That she made known to Reuters that the Sheikh had stated that the peace initiative was not being respected by the Egyptian authorities, and that his group should have a discussion about how to respond, and in his own view, more should be made of the media. There's no, even if the Sheikh had called for the right to resistance, which he did not, that would have been his right, and Lynn Stewart's right both to reflect and, even if she so chose, to advocate. What are we dealing with here? That we cannot advocate something? We cannot defend the right to resist of the oppressed? We cannot distinguish the violence of the oppressor from the resistance of the oppressed? That has become a criminal act for which 30 years of imprisonment is appropriate?
Ralph, I think, frankly, that if Lynn Stewart had made a public statement that Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman likes Coca-Cola instead of Pepsi-Cola, Attorney General Ashcroft would have considered that a violation and that she was a criminal, a career criminal, as the prosecution says. And the American Friends Service Committee put it succinctly in a letter, April 25th, 2002, at the time of the indictment of Lynn Stewart. And this is a letter that they wrote to U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft. And the reason I say this is because they used the FISA court secretly to spy unknowingly on attorney-client relations. And then, at the time of the Patriot Act, U.S. Attorney General Ashcroft issued a decree that there was no discussion. And this was a decree that they didn't even need the FISA court, but that attorney-client relations of not just those who were convicted, not even those who were charged, but any of them when it was held in a federal prison could be overheard, be spied upon. The important protections, that is, you have no defense then. And this is what the American Friends Service Committee wrote. Quote, "The role of defense counsel is a critical cornerstone in the protection of the rights of all individuals in our society. The indictment of an attorney for actions taken in the course of representing clients has extensive repercussions for our justice system. The most immediate is the chilling effect on other members of the bar and the resulting difficulty by clients, specifically those considered unpopular or presenting controversial ideas, in obtaining legal representation." End quote. And Abdin Jabara, who had been one of the attorneys of Omar Abdul Rahman, admitted in a letter to Judge Kotel, he admitted that he did not take up a subsequent case because of this chilling effect. And we have to look at this because right now in Miami, we have an example of a setup by the FBI. Very important case. And if you can go to our website and listen to our Taking Aim program on the Miami Mirage. And we must today deal with the situation in Miami because there we have, again, valiant attorneys defending people that the Attorney General, in this case, Alberto Gonzalez, and the FBI have targeted in a false flag operation. That is particularly a sting. This is a situation where the FBI sent in infiltrators, created the situation, funded the situation, and now has people in prison that they are saying were a terrorist operation.
Maya, you're referring to the article in particular by Walter Pincus in the Washington Post.
Dated September 2nd, 2006, and it's entitled FBI Role in Terror Probe Questioned, Lawyers Point to Fine Line Between Sting and Entrapment, and it goes into details of the court documents that have been released since our program on the Miami Mirage, and it substantiates everything we said on taking aim.
The FBI proposed the surveillance of the Sears Tower. The FBI provided the cameras. The FBI organized the activity. The FBI recruited young men to such undertakings. The FBI was involved in every facet of this. The young men in question had vanishingly little understanding of what it is that the FBI was doing. The Walter Pincus article goes point by point in establishing that this was, from its inception, a government design, a government implementation. It names the people, in fact, who were the FBI operatives who organized the entire thing. This is the nature of a false flag operation.
And it is very important in targeting Lynn Stewart and making Lynn Stewart such an example, putting her in prison for 30 years. That's what they're attempting, is to prevent attorneys, such as the attorneys for these people in Miami, preventing them from having representation.
Maya, look, in the trial of Lynn Stewart, the prosecution, Fitzgerald and others, brought into the courtroom the events of 2001, 9/11, imputing them to Osama bin Laden and attempting to associate these with Sheikh Abdulrahman. They brought up the coal. It's interesting that in the 9/11 commission, Condoleezza Rice and her acolytes were attempting to impute the coal to Osama bin Laden, and indeed in the trial they were not only associating Osama bin Laden with the coal, but Sheikh Abdulrahman. But of course, as we have documented, the ordnance that was used in the coal is a specific type of explosive only held by the United States and supplied by the United States to the Israelis. There is nothing to suggest any involvement of either Osama bin Laden or the Sheikh in the events of the coal. Indeed, all of the operations that were presented on to inflame the jury and to incite the jury by the prosecution, unrelated to the trial of Lynn Stewart, but the orchestration of the terror were false flag operations. The embassy in Nairobi, the bombing of the World Trade Center itself in 1993, the imputation to... Here's the BBC on Osama bin Laden. Could the bin Laden video be a fake? Washington calls it the smoking gun, but the sound is muffled, the image blurred and juddery. And the BBC report on December 14, 2001 establishes the scissors and paste job of that particular video. Osama bin Surplus, Carol Valentine, she raises the following question. Did Winston Churchill wear a swastika and a Luftwaffe uniform while giving speeches during World War II? Did President Kennedy wear a Cuban military uniform and smoke a Cuban cigar when addressing the nation during the Cuban Missile Crisis? Did Ariel Sharon wear a keffiyeh when giving press interviews in Israel? Of course not. Well, then why would Osama bin Laden wear a U.S. Army jacket of Special Forces issue for a home video about his involvement in these events? I ask you, brothers and sisters, when you're dealing... Why, of course, if the Lincoln assassination had happened but recently, we would have been told that the blind sheikh was responsible because, after all, he was targeting who? Lynn Cohen, right? That's the level of John Ashcroft, the psalm-singing attorney general who was defeated by a dead man in Missouri in his bid for election, and who deploys the media to orchestrate the frame-up not only of Lynn Stewart, but the targeting of all who dissent, and the orchestration in particular of the false category of terror.
Ralph, I really want to get to the particulars of what is taking place in Miami, because this so illustrates how the FBI and is operating, how the FBI and the CIA are operating and creating the fake terror operations. And this is the Walter Pincus article of September 2nd in the Washington Post. Standing in an empty Miami warehouse on May 24th with a man he believed had ties to Osama bin Laden, a dejected Narciel Batiste talked of the setbacks to their terrorist plot and then uttered the words that helped put him in a federal prison cell. "I want to fight some jihad," he allegedly said. "That's all I live for." What Batiste did not know, Pincus writes, was that the bin Laden representative was really an FBI informant. The warehouse in which they were meeting had been rented and wired for sound and video by Bureau agents who were monitoring his every word. Within a month, Batiste, 32, and six of his compatriots were arrested and charged with conspiracy to aid a terrorist organization and bomb a federal building. On June 23rd, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez had held a news conference to announce the destruction of a terrorist cell inside the United States, hailing, quote, "our commitment to preventing terrorism through energetic law enforcement efforts aimed at detecting and thwarting terrorist acts." Notice, detecting and thwarting terrorist acts. Just like putting Lynn Stewart in prison for 30 years as a deterrent. That's what the prosecution said. This will be a deterrent to other attorneys. But yet, when you go back and you look at the court documents and the questioning of Batiste's attorney, John Wiley, an attorney who would be prevented from representing his client if it were the wishes of the prosecution of the Department of Justice come true in the case of Lynn Stewart.
Yes, the frame-up in Miami, the Miami Mirage, has a direct parallel to the frame-up of Lynn Stewart and the entire orchestration of the category of terror as a false category with U.S. operations themselves involved. Nowhere is this better documented than in the article The Secret War by William Arkin, October 22nd, 2002, in which he exposes something known called P2OG, a joint interagency coordination group of the joint interagency task force in the United States, the epicenter, as he calls it, of the Pentagon's covert operations, North Carolina-based Joint Special Operations Command, and Delta Force, the super-secret command not officially acknowledged to exist. Its two-star commander, American Army Major General Dale L. Daley, and what is it that they are undertaking? Terror operations across the world that are designed to produce responses that will allow for prearranged attacks by the United States authorities to unfold. The creation of a superintelligence support activity called the Proactive Preemptive Operations Group, P2OG, bringing together CIA and military covert action, launching secret operations, terrorist operations, to prod responses and thereby to expose those who respond to prepared quick response attacks by the United States forces. This document about P2OG is not just a smoking gun. It is, in fact, the articulation of the entire stratagem of U.S. imperialism, the role of the category of terror, the meaning of the false flag operation in 1993, the underlying politics of the attacks of September 11, 2001, with the hands of intelligence all over them. What P2OG is the smoking gun of the United States authorizing and sponsoring and organizing and orchestrating all these events that are categorized as terror. And the psalm-singing attorney general is a conspirator in this undertaking, and the targeting of Lynn Stewart is to demonize the defender, to neutralize the resistor, to target every one of us who speaks truth to power, who dares to expose the hand of the U.S. authorities in these events, who shows that the blind sheikh is every bit the victim in this matter, that he has not the slightest involvement with the events of 1993, that the Luxor bombings and the tourist bombings are the works not of the sheikh but of the Mossad, that every single one of these terror operations has the hands of intelligence all over them, that Lynn Stewart is to be the martyr for those who would speak about the reality of these events, who dare to defend. Every attorney is put on notice.
Yes, Ralph, and let's go back to the notice in Miami, because this is unfolding as we speak. Right now, once again, we have this FBI operation to create a fake terror plot. And the attacks of the government are against the attorneys and also against the press for revealing these plans. At the recent hearing, Batiste's attorney, John Wiley, showed that the FBI's investigation found no evidence that his client had met with any terrorist, had received any emails or wire transfers from the Middle East, possessed any Al-Qaeda literature, or even a picture of bin Laden. What was revealed that there was not just one, but that there were two undercover agents. There was CW1 and CW2, FBI handlers, and one of them, CW2, had been working for the FBI for many years. All the money involved in the operation came from the FBI, and the FBI informants received tens of thousands of dollars for expenses and in remuneration, and also were receiving, one of them, political asylum, approval of the for his petition for political asylum in the United States. And this was CW2, who had the key role of plotting, suggesting targets, and also supplying the videotape equipment that these so-called terrorists used to photograph the FBI building in Miami. And that's what they were accused of doing, of plotting and photographing. The evidence was these photographs of the FBI building with equipment that was supplied by the FBI. And, as you mentioned, the idea of actually doing the photographing was the idea of this FBI agent, CW2.
Last week, Maya, we disclosed the fact that in the publication of National Interest in 1995-1996 winter, Laurie Milroy, who works for the American Enterprise Institute, who in fact is connected to the Mossad, orchestrated the theme that the bombing of the World Trade Center on February 26, 1993 was intended to topple the city's tallest tower onto its twin to collapse both tires in a cloud of cyanide gas. She goes on to contend in this long article of 19 pages that this was in fact an operation of none other than Saddam Hussein, that in fact the perpetrators were carrying Iraqi passports. And in fact, in the trial of Lynn Stewart, one of the claims about the event is that Sattar is supposedly carrying an Iraqi passport. All of this was imputed by Laurie Milroy to Iraq. We know that the plans to attack Iraq were well organized and in place, and the order to attack Iraq had been given just prior to the events of September 11th, 2001. The Wall Street Journal, April 2nd, 2004, Very Awkward Facts by Laurie Milroy. What does she contend? That Mr. Clark, by the way, Laurie Milroy, I should point out, was the terror expert advising William Jefferson Clinton. So both parties fully under the control, fully much involved in the criminal conspiracy of the ruling class. And here in the article in the Wall Street Journal on April 2nd, 2004, we have here the contention that it was in fact Iraqis, not just through Ramzi Youssef, but through the blind sheikh. It's the Iraqis, it's Saddam Hussein, who are responsible for the attacks of 1993. And indeed, in the Wall Street Journal, continuing on this theme, terrorists and their lawyers. What do jailed terrorists have in common with jailed mafia dons? The answer, as Attorney General John Ashcroft has been saying since September 11th, is that they don't let a little thing like being behind bars keep them from directing operations. It may be a tad tougher than on the outside, but hey, what are lawyers and translators for? Got the picture, brothers and sisters? What are lawyers for? To collaborate in the terror operations that of mafia dons because and of the accused, falsely accused. And who is Miss Milroy? Why, she is part of Benador Associates. And what is Benador Associates? It's the public relations firm that has orchestrated this entire fabricated case about 1993, which is attempted to orchestrate the idea that it is Saddam Hussein that was behind it, and therefore the attack on Iraq was long overdue. James Woolsey, Richard Pearl, Armitage, A.M. Rosenthal of the New York Times, Ahmed Tahiri, Kenan Makia, all of these intelligence operatives, the Benador Associates, which is the public relations firms orchestrating the big lie, doing the job that Ashcroft was assigned to complete in targeting Lynn Stewart. There is, in fact, a terror conspiracy, all right. It's at the highest levels of authority. It is treason at the top. And it is targeting Lynn Stewart because she defends us all, because she speaks truth to power, because she stands for the Sheikh falsely accused. She doesn't hesitate to rise to his defense and to meet her obligations as an advocate. And therefore, she is to be crucified with 30 years imprisonment because of her defiance of the terror state. Those are the stakes, brothers and sisters.
And it is our mobilization that can turn this around. Tonight, if you're in New York City, go to St. Mark's Church at 7 p.m. And on October 16th, that is the date of the sentencing hearing in the federal courthouse in Manhattan, Judge Kertel's courthouse. Now, that is at 500 Pearl Street in New York, 10 a.m. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Terror State Targets Lynn Stewart, Part 3.
Our Mother Courage, we stand with her, we resist with her. On to the struggle, brothers and sisters.
You're in tune to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM. Coming up next, the evening news.
Good evening. In the news tonight, New Jersey elected officials say no to the relight.